All right, Rob, we're back with episode 69.
Episode 69.
I know, it's an exciting number.
No jokes?
No, we're going to play it straight.
Episode 69.
Yeah.
Absolutely. One before 70.
So you came up with a really interesting idea for us to chat about today. Why don't you lead us in here on what the topic might be for today?
So I was thinking about when it comes time to talk, you're talking with a client about a project or a new client or whatever it is, and you get to that question, well, what's the budget?
Yeah. Money. What does this cost?
What does this cost? What's the budget?
Yeah.
And oftentimes you get the number and you go, ooh, that's a really low number.
Yeah.
And,
I always say $1 million.
$1 million.
Which then, you know, you always get a good chuckle out of that in the meeting.
Yeah.
Right. And then we even had a client earlier this week throw the pinky out. You know?
Yeah.
Boom. The old Austin Powers. Yeah, exactly.
So when you first get news of a low budget, you might go,
Yeah.
Not me. Not this guy.
No. You're psyched.
What has two thumbs and says that's great news? This guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Why? Because really what low budgets do or smaller budgets do is force you to be more creative,
yes.
I think.
Yes. I actually totally agree with that.
So it actually is an opportunity to sort of do something cool and crazy and fun. Mm-hmm. And it forces you to sort of think a little bit differently, I guess, more aggressively.
I think it also helps clients maybe accept ideas. I don't know, feel free to disagree with me on this, but maybe accept ideas that wouldn't traditionally be accepted with a higher budget because, hey, you only have the sandbox you have to play sandcastles in.
Yep.
And it's like, here's what can be done with that budget at play, right?
Yep.
So, and some of those ideas, might be a little bit... pushing the boundaries a little bit, right? Because you have to maximize creativity.
Have to.
Yeah.
So we'll start with an anecdote.
Okay. I love it.
When I was a young man.
Okay. How young?
I guess I was probably in eighth grade.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
When do you start mowing lawns? Eighth grade? Yeah. Probably in eighth grade.
I don't know. That's a great question. I mean, I don't feel like I was mowing lawns in elementary school. Yeah,
I think it was about eighth grade. So we'll say eighth grade.
Now, what kind of mower were we using though? Gas?
I mean, it was in eighth grade.
Well,
to date myself, but I don't think they had electric mowers all the way back then.
No, but I only had the push mower.
You had the push mower?
I had
the, oh no,
growing
gas,
up,
baby.
Yeah, growing up, good old Ted Mock made me use the push mower with that little contraption.
Supreme. I felt it was supreme.
It had a contraption on the back that like caught the clippings of some sort, some type of horrible basket. And it had like the the twisted rotational blades.
Yeah.
Oh, it was awful.
No. I had the full crank start.
You had to pull the rope thing, you know, that whole deal, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And
so I decided
I was going to landscape over the summer. I wanted to mow lawns.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't have much of a marketing budget.
Sure, sure.
So I just wrote down on a piece of paper, it was my very first tagline.
Wow.
Which was, I went by Robbie then. And
okay.
It was Robbie Broadfoot, your neighbor for labor.
Whoa.
How about that?
I love it.
Was my first little, and I made up this cool little card and I walked around and put it in everybody's mailboxes.
Okay,
and
nice.
Got business, right?
Now, this is the old school. The only way to contact you was by phone. Right? I mean, you had to give out the phone number.
Yeah, put your phone number on there and people would call you and I mowed all the lawns and things.
Nice.
So not a great creative example, but the idea that there was no marketing budget. So you get out there, you pound the pavement, you beat the street and hit the mailboxes. And then it was funny because later on in life.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Yeah. We did a great mailer that was for a landscape service not much of a budget. We could print a postcard, but the idea was we took a leaf and we stapled it to the postcard and the postcard said, we found this in your yard. If you'd like for us to come back for the 2,562,000 more, give us a call.
Yeah.
Which was a great, left in people's mailboxes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, super, super effective.
Yeah. I love that. I love that campaign. Cause, all you have to do is, I mean, how much does it cost to print a postcard? I don't even know, but like not a lot. Keep them in the truck. Right.
Yeah.
They're obviously on their way to their destination to do whatever services they, you know, but they're going
to
get,
you have to have a stapler.
Yeah. But they're going to get more maximum, I hate to say ROI, but by not just having one house on the block, get the whole block get people around, you know what I mean? So that they save on time, they save on labor from not driving around all over the place, you know, save on gas, all the good stuff. I thought that was a awesome idea.
So, in that same vein, you and I worked on a project. It was for a mailer for a company that does industrial coating and marking.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And they wanted to do something impactful. They wanted to do a direct piece.
Now, hold on a second. Explain what industrial coding and marking is, just in case people don't know
this,
what it is.
This piece specifically was for the lumber industry, right?
Okay.
So they have the big machines that, you know, you go into the lumber yard and they have to mark the actual number on the lumber supply chain management, basically.
Sure, sure.
Right. So it's all for about supply chain.
Yeah.
And so they do the coding and marking, and they do it for wood, they do it for PVC plastic, they do it for metals, they do it for everything.
Yeah, I think they even did like the printer that prints the born on dates on like bottles.
On the bottles, on your beer bottles or whatever it is.
Yeah. So it's printing in all these weird three-dimensional avenues and areas, to your point, for supply chain management.
And so this was an initiative specifically for the lumber industry. And they wanted to do something impactful. And so, you know, we came up with the idea of... So the old way of doing this is literally stamping.
Yeah.
You like stamp things.
Yes.
And sometimes you can read it, sometimes you can't. I mean, the benefits of doing it with a digital printer are obvious, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
It's nice and clear. And so we wanted to talk about this idea of, hey, we have a new and better and improved way of doing it. So the idea that we came up with was sort of a box. And because this company that we worked with worked in this industry, obviously access to lumber was super easy. So we literally took 2x4s.
Yes.
And sawed them into little chunks.
Yeah.
Right? And zero cost.
Yeah.
And then in our office, we had a stamp made that said the old way.
Yeah.
And then we had a nice one made that said the new way.
Yes. Right? Well, so they printed with their printers
on
the wood.
Right. Yeah, on the actual blocks of wood, the new way. So you had one side of the block and we sat in the office and we literally hand stamped I don't even remember how many of these, 500 maybe?
Well, there weren't tens of thousands of these things because there's only so many sawmills and wood.
And it was a regional play.
Yeah.
It was a regional play.
In the United States.
Right. I think there were 500. Well, let's just say 500, something like that.
Yeah.
And we literally sat here in the office and hand stamped every single block to say the old way.
Yeah.
And the idea was great because you didn't have to perfectly stamp it.
No,
You know,
it's a crappy ass stamp.
All you had to do was be able to make out the letters and read the idea.
Totally, totally.
And then we packaged that in a box so that it said, and when you opened it, you saw the old way on this block of wood. And then when you picked it up and took it out and flipped it over, you saw the new way. And then there was a nice little brochure in
little
there
booklet.
That explained what we do and introduced the services.
Yeah.
And I always thought it was a really cool idea. It was a really efficient use of money, very cost effective because you're literally taking wood and then your hand doing it.
Yeah. Plus, it's a good reminder that in this digital age of all we do is Google AdWords and this and that, you know, it's like, do an old-fashioned mailer. That's a touchy-feely thing, you know?
People like tactile
I was about to say, if you get a box in the mail...
you're going to open it.
Yeah, you're not like... Think about that versus email. Like, oh, mail came and somebody put a box on your... Like, you're going to open the box. You're not going to not pay attention to the box, you know?
100% chance you're going to open the box.
Yeah, now there is... open the
box. What's in the box?
Well, that's just what I was thinking about. But that's a story for another podcast. But... you know, versus just the sea of emails of email. Yeah. And I'm not knocking email. I'm just saying, hey, mix it up. You know what I mean? If you do have a limited budget, maybe there is an old fashioned, old school way of doing things.
And that piece, obviously that was pretty easily trackable. And there was a direct ROI, huge bump in sales for that piece. And I don't remember what the multiple was on the return, but it was massive for them.
Yeah.
So that was kind of a cool one.
I love that one. It's a great example of limited budget, but maximizing creativity specific to that industry, right? And using that target audience appropriately and speaking specific to that target audience, right? I love that one.
There was another one. Want to talk about the MedShape?
Yeah. Well, we worked with a company named MedShape. We can name drop them because they've since been acquired, actually.
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, but we worked with those guys from the outset. And they are a orthopedic medical device company, or were at the time. Now they're just a division of a larger firm or whatever, right? And they had developed an alternative method to, I'm going to try to break down the science very simply here, but reattaching torn ligaments to your bone, right? The traditional method that has been done for years and years, right, is, oh, I tore my rotator cuff, or I tore my something, you know, some type of ligament hanging off. Yeah, you've got personal experience.
I literally did tear my rotator cuff.
So you tear it off, right? And it's, hey, well, those things are attached to your bone, right? The only way that we used to do it in the past is we would drill a little, I mean, and again, I'm painting with a broad brush here, but yeah. We would drill a little pilot hole into your bone, okay? Take the end of the ligament, which is attached to your muscle, right? Wrap that around a screw, right? Like a Phillips head looking kind of screw, right? And then screw that sucker back into your bone,
yep.
Right? And there's a lot of reasons why that's a bad thing, but there's no other, you can't glue it down. You know, I mean, you have to permanently right. fix it, right? And then over time, of course, and through rehab and therapy and whatnot, the ligament basically sort of attaches itself to the bone, right? Mm-hmm. So they developed a product called ExoShape, right? Which was a different way to reattach the ligament to your bone, right?
Right.
So instead of, wrapping the ligament around a screw and screwing it in, which slowly destroys the structural integrity of what little ligament you have left, right? And also, as you're rotating it and putting it back in, you kind of have to guess where, the end of that ligament's going to be on the screw, right? In terms of how your arm moves and things like that. They developed kind of this plug method, right? Where they drill a hole in your bone, they put this little convex sort of plug sort of in there, and then they put your ligament into that little hole, like a little well, if you will, right? And then they shoot this little conical device into, and it's a plug. It holds your ligament where it's supposed to be, right? So it's a non-rotational way of reattaching your ligament. I know I'm being super scientific here, right? But they wanted to launch this at a trade show, right? And, medical startup device company, not a lot of money, not a lot of budget, right, to get going. We're like, hey, let's just do fun t-shirts. Have everybody in the booth wear t-shirts, print up 50 shirts, And I don't know if you recall this, Rob, but we really had to fight for this one,
yeah.
Right? Marketing guy loved it. The rest of the guys
were terrified.
Terrified. So I think he went rogue and actually printed 25 or 50 of these things on the side hatch,
yeah.
Right? Without, it's like, we're doing it anyway, right? But the idea, I know it's taken a long way for me to get here, but the idea was we printed these shirts that on the front of it said, don't screw yourself.
Right.
That was the line on the front of the shirt.
Nice and big and bold.
Don't screw yourself, right? And then on the back, it was, hey, ExoShape, the non-rotational, fixation, blah, 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 whatever the case may be, right? Gangbusters.
Yeah.
I mean, I think they went through all the shirts in like 5 minutes.
Yeah. Big, bold statement at the trade show.
Yeah. And humor for that very specific audience, but also ties right back into a direct benefit to their product.
Right.
Right. So right. To your earlier point, I mean that, creativity on a limited budget, but has resonance there. Right. And really, really worked. I mean, it's a great example of sort of strategic creative messaging yeah. deployed for that specific audience.
It is. It's always great when clients let you do that type of.
Yeah.
Let you do that type of. It scares them, but they like being scared.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
a good thing.
Absolutely. Well, it's we know it's going to work,
Right.
And maybe the marketing guy knows it's going to work, or marketing guy, right? But then there's you got to get buy-in from everybody else, right?
So shareholders get scared.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and for them it was a fun exercise because they were startup. There's only so many people there. It wasn't like we're working with Johnson & Johnson. You know what I mean? Like that type.
Yeah.
So you can be a little bit more aggressive depending on where you are in the marketplace, right? Against your competitor.
So another example is a campaign that that I worked on years ago for the now, I don't want to say defunct, because it's not really defunct. It was, they merged with KSU, but Southern Polytechnic State University.
SPSU, yeah.
And so they have one of the top robotics programs in the country, which is awesome. And at the time, I don't remember the year, but at the time they were hosting the, I think it was the Southeastern regionals, whatever, for robotics. So they wanted a campaign around that and just to sort of drive awareness for SPSU. So the idea that we came up with was that SPSU's had created, they had created this robot, and obviously we named the robot Polly.
Yeah.
So they had created Polly the robot, but the robot was so adept that it escaped campus.
Yes.
Right? And so
robot rogue.
Robot leaves campus. Oh my gosh, we've lost our robot, right? From the campus point of view and the school's point of view. But from the robot's point of view, it was well, I gotta get a job. I'm out in the world now. I need to be a gainfully employed robot.
For like, sure.
I gotta make ends meet. So we came up with this campaign that was that narrative. And so it had two halves to it. One was from the perspective of the school. And that was missingrobot.com.
Yeah.
And that was,
I remember this,
user engagement. Yeah, show, tell us where you found, and we did wild postings all over, you know, missing robot, help us find the robot and all this stuff. And then we did robotforhire.com, which was Polly's resume and everything else. And I need to go get a job.
Yeah. Well, it's, hey, I went through this university. I've got all these amazing skills. Hire me. Right.
And so we had a little bit of a budget, not a lot, but what we ended up doing was hiring, a local, puppeteer actually, to create the actual robot costume.
Okay.
And it was like a, more of a 50s style looking robot. It wasn't like a, you know, I don't know, super contemporary robot. So it's sort of a throwback kind of almost like a, Buck Rogers.
Yeah.
What was the robot? Maximilian?
I think
did I just nail it?
I think you did nail it. Wow. I don't know.
Fact check me. But anyway, so we built the actual costume, and then we just went around sort of guerrilla style and filmed these quick little videos of Polly at the coffee shop, behind the counter pouring coffee as a barista.
Yeah.
And in various other just sort of small jobs to post on the sites and post online and YouTube and all over the places. And then the funniest thing was we were like, okay, well, let's get, Dragon Con was in town.
Yes.
Which, for those who don't know, that's the ginormous, what do you even call it? It's a giant convention.
It's a big, like, sci-fi, comic book, movie,
cosplay,
sort of, but gaming.
It's
right?
got all it's, the things.
Yeah, it's a big one down here. It's like multiple hotels downtown Atlanta. And it's always, is it Labor Day? It's always,
I think it's always, right.
It's close to school starting, I think, or maybe
it's huge. Yeah. It's a ginormous convention. And so we had come up with the idea, we're like, oh, well, let's buy a ticket and let's infiltrate the floor. Let's take Polly down there. And a buddy of mine was going to help me out and was going to dress up in the costume and walk around.
Yeah.
And of course, the day before, he gets sick. So who ends up in the robot costume? Yours truly. So I put on this costume and went to Dragon Con.
That's awesome.
And walked around the whole floor. Spent the day down there just kind of walking around.
Yeah.
And I mean, it was awesome.
Yeah.
It was awesome because you're in a costume and you can just kind of walk around and do whatever and meet and greet.
Yeah, I
felt like I was at Disney World, you know?
Inside the Goofy costume.
Inside the Goofy costume.
Yeah.
And it totally worked. It was great. We got all kinds of coverage out of it.
Yeah.
We also had Polly, of course, just walking down the street, talking to people and interacting, and people took pictures and posted them and all this kind of stuff. And then the campaign, it culminated at the actual Southeastern Robotics event at SPSU, where of course Polly showed up and made it back to campus.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
All is well in the world.
What a fun idea and what a fun campaign.
It was a cool campaign, and we didn't have a lot of money, and we just kind of bootstrapped it. And again, it was a super creative idea, I think, that did really well. It drew a lot of attention.
Yeah,
so that was
well, I love the wild postings aspect to it too. I mean, the whole missing robot.
Have you seen our robot?
Yeah.
You know,
it's pretty awesome. You know,
that was a good one.
No, so but even, you know, there was a little bit of budget there because obviously you made the costume.
Yep.
Right, and we've got a couple different
and
websites.
And the microsites.
But it's taking that almighty dollar and stretching it as far as humanly possible within the confines that you've got. Right.
Yep. So. The last one, and because I know we're jamming, but
no, awesome.
A recent one
you got tons of these.
That was good was, if anybody remembers that, I think this was within the last like 6 months or so, there was a horror movie that came out called Smile.
Okay.
And
you're the horror guy. I'm not a horror guy. I love horror films.
And, I don't know how to describe the movie. I don't want to give anything away, but it involved once you were infected, dare I say, by the entity.
Dude, it's been 6 months. I mean, I feel like, you know, spoiler alert.
Well, there was this spirit, right, that took people over.
And
when it took you over, you obviously did very bad things.
Sure.
You sort of weren't in control.
Okay.
But you always knew that it was triggered when the person smiled.
Okay.
And they would smile in this really creepy
okay.
cryptic, weird way.
Weird.
Right. I mean, it's the great idea of turning a happy face into the scariest thing in the world, right?
Absolutely.
So what they did was they bought tickets like right behind home plate for baseball games and whatever else. So I guess it would have been a year ago. But So they bought seats right behind home plate and in various other sporting events.
So they're always on camera.
Yeah. And they put people in the smile shirts. So they hired the actors. They put them in the smile shirts. Nice, big, bold smile so you could read it on camera. And the people, the actors just sat there still as could be for the entire game and smiled.
Oh my God. That's creepy.
Yeah. And I mean, of course, there's a little bit of budget there. You got to buy the good seats, right? Yeah. And you got to hire, you got to pay the actors.
Yeah, absolutely.
It garnered huge attention, right? Yeah. I mean, you're talking about free airtime.
Yeah.
You're talking about all the PR that came out of that.
Yeah.
All the wild postings, all the crazy stuff. But I thought that was a really good stunt and a really smart way to do something on
yeah, that is a fun one because it's a non-traditional avenue for entertainment for movies and whatnot, right? I mean, obviously we're used to billboards, we're used to all sorts of commercials, you're used to trailer, you know, you're not used to seeing that. It's a shock to the system because you're not used to seeing that at a sporting event. You know what I mean? Like what's going on? And it ties in really well to the theme of the movie, right?
And it was so unique that there's no, on the shirts, it just said smile with the people. I mean, there's no URL, there's no call to action, there's no nothing.
Yeah.
It was so odd that anyone who saw it would have been like, what in the world is that? And all you had to do was Google smile people at baseball game.
Boom,
you're going to find what you're going to figure it out.
Yeah.
That's so awesome. That was a cool one.
I love that one.
I thought that was pretty neat.
I love that one.
So those are a few examples of creativity on limited budgets.
Yeah. No, I think it's a fun topic. I mean, we love big budgets too. But
yeah, we don't want to scare off our big budget friends because we certainly love those too.
All right. Well, I think those are cool. I think those are good. That really ran the gamut of a lot of different examples, right?
Yeah. And a lot of different tactics.
Yeah. I was going to say just from a t-shirt to all sorts of different things.
Yeah. So. Direct to t-shirts to everything else, TV and print and everything else.
All sorts of good stuff. All right. I think that'll maybe wrap it up for today, right?
I'm going to go watch a horror movie.
Do it. While you're watching a horror movie, where can the people find us?
Yeah, on the interwebs, of course. If you go to wherever you find your favorite websites, and you type in www.mocktheagency.com and hit return on your keyboard, that will then take you to our website.
Yeah.
Where you can see a bunch of samples of our work, and on the social networks, that's where people gather online to interact with one another these days.
Do they interact or do they just argue these days?
A lot of arguing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lot of arguing.
Yeah.
Somebody should really clean that up and moderate it, that space. But anyway, we're there, of course, at Mock the Agency and would love to hear feedback and thoughts and ideas and other cool ideas. If you guys have cool creative ideas that you've explored, we'd love to hear them. So thanks for tuning in, and we will talk loud at you next time for episode 70.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
You keep trying to cut me off, but I'm going to keep wrapping it up. So that's it.
No, we're good.
Here we are. All right. Bye, everybody.
All right, see you.